What if the team is the product? How do we make a more circular team? And where can you make changes? How do you think of things differently in terms of equipment use, equipment allocation?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of this series on sustainability in cycling. My name is Magali, and today's guest is Isabella Berthold, and she's a Canadian cyclist. She used to be a sailor, and what's interesting about Isabella is that I've been hearing about her from various different sources, and so I kind of knew I had to speak to her. Initially, when I started making some research for this podcast series, I fell onto one cycling team that was putting the environment at the forefront of most of their decisions. Then the UCI spoke to me about Isabella, saying like, she's a really good example. Maybe you would like to talk to her. She's done really cool things. Then I started reading about how things are done in different sports. And then I fell onto the sport of sailing and SailGP, which is an independent racing circuit in sailing, and how they have this impact league that puts the environment at the forefront of their activities as well. And then Isabella was part of that series. So there were just too many things that were pointing me towards Isabella. And so I reached out to her, and she was kind enough to take time to speak with me and share some of the things that she has learned, some of the things that she is doing. And so I won't say more. Let's just go to this conversation with Isabella Berthold. And thank you, Isabella, for taking the time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And catch you later. This episode and this full series is presented by The Unscented Company. The Unscented Company makes home and body care products that are all natural, that are good for the environment, that are unscented. And they wanted to support that podcast series because they wanted to help me learn more about the environment and how I can make a bigger difference. Last week, I mentioned how I started traveling with The Unscented Company's soap bar and shampoo bar and conditioner bar to save on plastic bottles from buying shampoo and all that stuff when traveling. Of course, I use those at home as well. But another product that I started using in the last few years was The Unscented Company's laundry pods. So they are really small pods and they're super easy to travel with. But again, it saves from buying big plastic detergent bottle when I'm traveling. So it's a small gesture. But as I'm learning through these podcast episodes is that small daily habits can make a difference. And so here's an easy one that I started doing a few years ago, thanks to The Unscented Company. Isabella, thank you for joining this morning. I mean, I could try to introduce you, but I think the best person to do it is yourself. So would you mind introducing yourself and telling us, yeah, what's your role in cycling? And yeah, just how would you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Magali. Thanks for having me. So I'm Isabella. I am from Vancouver, Canada, and I wear many hats, both as a professional road cyclist. I'm a professional sailor as well. And I think sort of tie everything sort of together. I also really like projects and I like staying busy. So when I see opportunities to try and drive change or make something happen, I do that. So I also started a women's cycling team, which previously was called InstaFun Pro Cycling, and this year is racing under the banner of Platform Pro Cycling presented by InstaFund. And I also spearheaded Canada's entry into the first ever Women's America's Cup in sailing, which is happening this October in Barcelona. And beyond that, I also work in venture capital as a fund manager, mostly more on the impact investing side. So there's a lot of sustainability ties and just very purpose-driven projects as well within that.
Wow. As you said, many hats. That's so cool. I would like to talk about your women's team, if that's okay. Yeah. Can you Can you tell us what is the ethos? What is like how and why did you, like I guess why did you decide to start this team and what are your goals with platform pro racing?
Yeah, so the team is now in its sixth season, and it really started because I found cycling later in life. I injured my knee while I was racing on the World Cup circuit in Olympic sailing. And I was just biking for rehab, and at one of the sports centers, I was told by one of the physiologists that I should probably give road cycling a try, and jumped into a race and absolutely loved it. And then as sort of, I think, I just high performance athletes do, you can't do something just for fun. And so I wanted to take it further. And I started talking to teams to try and get more racing opportunities. And everybody just kept telling me I was really old. And I was only 26 at the time. So I really didn't think that I was that old, especially like coming from another sport. There's plenty of examples, especially in road cycling, of that happening. And at the same time, I was lucky enough that when I entered road cycling, there's a whole group of us with a really similar situation out of Vancouver. And I just said, well, fine, we can just make our own team. How hard can it be? And so that very first year, we just raced as a Canada trade team and went to like the major stage races in North America. So Redlands, Joe Martin, Gatineau. And then the following year, actually stepped up to the UCI level. And up until this year, we were a UCI Continental team, and this year decided just to take a step back from that because it didn't really make financial sense anymore to race in North America as a UCI team.
Okay. And what's the, so platform, I mean, I read about your theme, and platform, it means something. I think it's about giving a platform to a lot of different women to develop themselves, but I'm probably saying it wrong. So like, what are your goals? Because I know that you're there to empower a lot of people, but I think also you have a really big vision in terms of sustainability for your cycling team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we can all relate, and all of the listeners of this podcast will fully appreciate, is that sport is a platform to drive change and to create positive change in society. Athletes are very powerful influencers, especially now with social media. And so the name of Platform Pro Cycling was really to give athletes and riders not only a platform to push themselves as athletes, but also to expand their message and get their message out to a greater audience. And so one thing, and this is where this started, is on the sustainability side. And that's, oh, wow, our journey in that started almost 5 years ago as a bike team of wanting to take on the sort of a sustainability message to drive little sort of daily habit changes that actually make a really big difference. And so that is really, for me, like sport is my own personal platform to try and drive change for positive change on sustainability, environmental change, and also like gender and equity and diversity in sport a little bit. But I'd say really my passion area is more on the sustainability side. And so that was, I think, oh man, I want to say our public push on the sustainability side started with just a simple photo of a plastic water bottle sitting on one of our tables at like a pre-race meeting when we were racing in Spain. And we just put an X through it and said, no more plastic bottles in cycling. Like this doesn't have to be a thing. And that sort of was our first sort of public push outwards of trying to drive change of saying like, let's just start by getting rid of single use plastics. And that was, yeah, many years ago now. And I think I'm very excited when I can say that I feel like we've moved beyond that. When you look around teams now where you don't see very much single use plastic anymore in the pro peloton. And in general, I think society has moved beyond that as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. And one thing that you said that kind of struck me as really cool is you said changing small daily habits. And I think that's probably really powerful because, I mean, I've been like thinking about how I can make changes in my own, like in my own career and how I run my own little team of just me. So it's much smaller, but, yeah. But still like sometimes there are things that are difficult. Like I have to go get to the races somehow, you know, so traveling is like, okay, this is one thing that I can't completely cut off. But small daily habits are something that maybe I can change, or perhaps working with partners that have similar vision, and then we can try to make changes together. What are some of the are you willing to share some of the things that your team have done differently, maybe, or that you've been able to make an impact or a big change in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, I think happy to share a little bit on sort of the small sort of day-to-day habits, where it really did start with just eliminating single-use plastics. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we have reusable bags, some of which have actually been upcycled from some of our, like, Scratch Labs mix, for example, to put ride food into pockets in the back. Everyone got given, like, a travel pack of Tupperware. So, like, pre-race, post-race meals were put in that. We work with Bevo water bottles. And so we really, like, even minimizing our reusable plastic bottles, that I know, like, there's reasons why you race with those bottles for sure. But we sort of did the math and went, we think we can get that number down to, like, 30 for a season. Yeah. For a team, if you are using Bevo bottles pre and post race, in and around houses and all of that, not putting mix in them, and just being quite a bit smarter. So those are, I think, the like really, really basic things. We actually, a couple of years ago, tried to change our travel schedule and our race calendar, mm-hmm, to minimize our travel. So eliminating flights for riders wherever possible and driving. We changed our driving routes to try and line things up and leaving vehicles places so that they weren't driving back and forth, for example. It works to an extent, except for you obviously want to get to the races still that you want to get to. And so that was a challenge, but it did bring up really good conversations with us, with some individuals at the UCI around, like, you can change your calendar. You can think about optimizing things that when people are moving, they don't have to move in, like, these weird back and forth diagonal ways. Like, you can actually have flow to your race calendar. So that was a really big sort of positive spin out. And then I think the things that I get the most excited about is when we actually work with partners on helping them, whether it's as basic as understanding what they can do. And a really good starting point for us was we actually did a circularity workshop, one of the Circo workshops that's put on by Eric from Circo. And we did that with one of our apparel partners.
Okay, so all the team did the course with your apparel partner?
So it was myself as the team representative, and then two people from the apparel company did it. And we did it jointly. Cool. And it was really interesting because not only were we working with them on the apparel side, but then because of everybody else doing the workshop, we actually said, well, what if the team is the product? How do we make a more circular team? And where can you make changes? How do you think of things differently in terms of equipment use, equipment allocation? And what that really sort of brought me back to is working with just values aligned partners of being able to try something and saying, like, we're going to try this new jersey material, and then finding out it totally does not work in a race environment. But at least we've tried it, we've tested it, and they've been able to move forward and make more progress and bring that culture into their company as well, which I think is back to the, like, every little thing makes a difference. And so now if you suddenly have 10 people in a company thinking about how can we reduce the footprint of our product, how can we extend the life cycle of it, how do we more effectively pass old product back down to other people as well, and thinking about that entire sort of product life cycle, that's when change happens. And so I think that's, and we've got some really great partners that I absolutely love talking about sustainability things with, and knowing what they have going on in the background. It's exciting for sure.
Wow. I really love that. That's a super cool story. And it's cool that, like, you can influence other people to think in a different way, and then that can have such a big impact, because one person that talks to another suddenly, like, so many people are more aware and thinking about some solutions and about the situation. So I think that's super cool. And what have you faced any obstacles or challenges? So I can share like what I face as challenges sometimes is, or maybe fears, because I don't know if I've faced them yet, but fears as I try to go into that process. Like one of them would be that, okay, let's say I choose a calendar. So I'm in North America, I'm in Canada, like you, yeah, where you're coming from too. If I choose a calendar that, you know, kind of stays more in North America and doesn't travel as much to Europe, are my partners still gonna want to work with me if I choose a different calendar that from other people, you know? So that's one. And the other sometimes that I think about is like financially, because I think like if you want to keep having a platform, if you want to keep having an impact, I have to like, it has to be financially sustainable as well. So like how do the two kind of can combine, you know? So those are like my own fears. But I don't know, like what have you found any obstacles or like fears or like have you faced those things? I know you also work in venture capital, so you're probably like super, I mean, you're very aware of the financial side of things as well. So like what are your thoughts about that? Like, have you found any obstacles in trying to make changes?
Oh, plenty. And I think, yeah, I'll talk a little bit about the travel one, because yeah, it's the elephant in the room for any athlete, especially an athlete from North America. I mean, I won't hide it. Like I have tons of transatlantic flights back and forth, every single year, and I haven't found a solution for it. And one thing though, that, sort of comes back to me is, it's like the net change that you're driving and also just staying authentic and true to yourself. So when somebody asks me and says like, why aren't you just in Europe full time? Why do you need to fly back and forth? I will like very honestly and openly say, I have family and friends back in Vancouver, and that's important for my mental health. I have a Bernese Mountain Dog that I absolutely love that I need to go back and see, and like flying him back and forth doesn't help either. Like it's not gonna fix it. And also like, yeah, just the level of competition to access, like you need to go to Europe. There's no way around it. And with that, it's like, I'm just authentic and transparent about it. And I share it. And then I say though, and like, but here's everything else that I'm doing in the background. And here is the positive change that I'm driving. And here's the organizations that I'm supporting and working with to help promote their messaging as well. And so for me, it's like, if the net impact that I'm having is positive, and as long as I'm honest and open with, when somebody asks me something and says, well, what do you do about that? It's like, well, some of the times there are just challenges and you can't overcome them. But it is making the right decision when you have the opportunity to make the right decision. And so I think like once I'm in Europe, like the trains are phenomenal here. And you can also drive quite easily. You don't need to get on a 35-minute flight. Yeah. So making those decisions when you do have the option really does make a difference.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And you just said something that, I mean, that I think can be very powerful, is like balancing the impact, like the sustainability impact that you can have with the positive impact that you can have. And I think like that's one thing that I've been thinking about, like going forward, is like, okay, if I am going to make that travel, let's really make it count. And let's make sure that while I'm there, I have the most positive impact that I can, and that I do the best way I can. So at least I traveled for something, you know? And it seems like, I mean, you mentioned that too, like if my positive impact is bigger than the other impact that I'm having, then it's fine. Do you have like some ways that you like calculate your positive impact, or without calculating, like how do you think about it?
Yeah. So this is maybe, I think, where my like impact investing brain comes in. So in impact investing, there's like all these catalogs and metrics that you can go in and say, like, this is the target that I'm trying to meet in an indicator, and this percentage of change every year means you're having that positive impact. So that's like a very specific way of doing it. But there are a more basic version would be like the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And so I would highly recommend that people who are wanting to have a positive impact go in there, check them out and click on them. And it's quite an interactive site. And underneath a lot of them, they give you targets or indicators of if you're helping to achieve this goal, then you're making a positive impact. And that everything counts on like environmental use, water use, responsible consumption, which links into a lot of like product circularity, even education and access to like really good role models and mentors is captured within that. So that's, I would really encourage people to go and take a look at that side. And I have tried to properly calculate my footprint using like emissions trackers and everything. And the cycling team was a signatory for the last 3 years of the UN Sports for Climate Action. And so we did have to submit reports as well, actually like tracking our footprint, which was, that was hard to do for a whole cycling team because you're asking everybody individually, like, how did you get to the airport? And I also had to do that over on the SailGP side as well, which I think we can touch on that a little bit later or move into it. But it was really interesting to see how that tracking evolved and how it got grouped into more buckets as well. And it's, I'm going to say it's much like being an athlete where you set a goal and you break down the goal and say, here's how I'm going to achieve my goal by this date and time. And then you keep tracking yourself and seeing, well, did I actually achieve that goal?
Yeah. So that's something that you, I mean, that's something that you work on and think about when you work as a venture capital, like the impact. Is that
It's like just like how if you do like a financial report every year where you can see how a company did, you do the exact same reporting side on the impact side as well, like what kind of an impact is the fund having, how are companies doing on their impact metrics, so there's a full report that goes along with that as well.
Cool. And I mean, I do want to talk about SailGP and we'll move into that right after. But now that we're talking about venture capital, like you have a really good, I mean, you're right into the financial world. So like, you know, all about that. What is your opinion on like, how can sustainability like work? Can it work hand in hand with like performance and financial sustainability? Like, do you see, I don't know, like, are we doomed or like, are we like too deep into the social construct of like making financial our first goal always? Or do you think there's ways that they can work hand in hand?
Yeah. So I really view it as like your impact goals and your sustainability goals need to help your financial bottom side for it to make sense. And also for everybody in the company to buy in. Because even if somebody doesn't care about the environment at all, if they see that it's going to make the company more money or make them more money, they're going to do it. They're going to buy into it. And I think that's one thing that's really interesting when you start looking at more the circular economy, but like the supply chain and shipping side and production and all of that. And generally what I've seen is companies who put sustainability at their forefront are actually saving money in the product manufacturing side and how they're getting product to their customers. And the other sort of side of it is just the how likely is that customer to buy a product again as well. So if you're a company that has good values, and I think there's definitely great examples in the cycling world, but I'll use like a more generic one, like Patagonia is a well-known company around the world of having like very strong sustainability ethics. And I know plenty of people who buy product because it aligns with their values from that brand. So you're creating a customer for life, which helps. And also this is one where I get pushback sometimes, but I say actually creating a product that lasts longer is good for business. Because I do think that people feel like they get good value for their money then. Maybe they're even more likely to sort of pass that product recommendation on to a friend then. And so, yeah, I do think like all of these things need to make the company more money or else it doesn't make sense. But yep. I really do believe that good sustainability practices in a company actually drive financial return.
Cool. Okay. Thanks for sharing your opinion on that. I think that's awesome. SailGP, like I read about that and I mean, what a game changer. So I guess like, can you just like tell people what is SailGP and what is the Impact League that they incorporated into the competitions like of SailGP?
Yeah. So SailGP is a professional sailing league that I think the easiest way to describe it, it's like Formula One on the water. So these boats are like fast flying boats. They're racing at like 100 kilometers an hour, really close, tight racing. So there's lots of collisions that happen. Hopefully not too many, but they do happen. And so that's the sports side of it, but something that really helped make SailGP, famous sort of outside of the sailing world is actually their Impact League, which is a whole separate standalone trophy that teams compete for alongside the championship trophy for winning the championship at the end of the season. And the way it works is the teams are scored across a variety of things, and it has evolved a lot over the last 3 years. But the easiest way of thinking it is you get scored on basically the carbon footprint of the team. So how did people travel? What hotels are they staying in? Are you using single-use plastics? You get penalized for that. There's been different renditions of it. Like there used to be bonus points for eating vegan while you were on site. And then there's also sort of these bigger category scoring points that focused on either interacting with the community at the race that you were at around like a basic example would be like leading a shoreline cleanup with a youth group from the community that you're actually there, or driving a bigger innovation project that either had a positive impact on the league. And so examples of that are like some of the teams have incorporated solar panels into their bases or are running some of their motorboats off solar panels. Or also a lot of these projects can fall into more the DE&I side, so diversity, equity, inclusion. So around like how do we give more access to women in the sport and give the female athletes more training time? Are there other ways that we can make the sport more accessible to a broader community? So there's all these categories and you get judged on some of them, and some of them are like black and white. Like one example is if you fly economy to get to a race, that's fine. But if you're taking a business class ticket, you get penalized points for it. And so there's all of that and the points are added up. And what's really, I think, the biggest motivator for the teams to perform well is every team has a purpose partner. And these purpose partners are generally not-for-profits that the teams partner with. And the teams actually win prize money for their purpose partner by doing well in the Impact League. So you're, as a team, able, we don't even know what it is this season, but it's a large sum of money that you can win for your purpose partner. And some of the teams that have won have done really cool collaboration projects with their purpose partner around that. Whereas other times there's like pre-agreed upon project areas that the purpose partners will spend the money on. Wow. So it really is, it's quite an exciting thing. And I loved being involved with it on the Canadian team because it got me, our purpose partner was Oceanwise, and I got to do some really cool like science experiments, basically is the best way of putting it, of like washing our wetsuits in different washing machines to see how much plastic actually leaches out from our wetsuits when we wash them.
Wow.
And then testing it to a sustainable alternative for our wetsuits, and like is this material any better? And then what happens if you change the temperature that the wetsuits are washed at? Does it reduce how much microplastic leaches into the water system? And like cool things like that, that you normally wouldn't get to do, like became accessible because of the SailGP Impact League and the Purpose Partner Initiative.
That's incredible. And did I understand well in reading a little bit about it online that all these categories like that give you a ranking among the teams, like with the points that you make up for the good actions that you make, there's a ranking. And did I read correctly that if you're ranked in the top three, for example, you have like more time of training on water and like it actually helps your performance too?
Yeah, I think it's changed a little bit this year because they've changed the format of the racing. But there used to be, so one of the most annoying things about SailGP is it takes like an hour and a half to put the boat in the water every morning and an hour and a half to take the boat out. And so with all these teams, your days can be really long. Like I've had days where I've showed up at 6 a.m. and I leave at 11 o'clock at night. And so if you won the Impact League, the event before, you got what was called the Golden Crane ticket. So you got to pick what time you put your boat in and out of the water.
Okay. Wow.
That was like huge, where you're like, you're trying to sleep in a little bit extra or like traveling with jet lag, you go, it's better if we do it this way. So it sounds like a really small thing, but it adds up, and it was very, it was nice when we won the Impact League and had that ticket.
So to me, this is genius. Like if you can find a way to make sustainability part of the performance, like then there's no way not to do it. It's such a big incentive. Whereas like right now, let's say in cycling, I don't know, like I'll just take an example that you said. Let's say like I organize a shoreline cleanup, which would not make sense at cycling, but whatever. Yeah. I do that. I take some time and energy and I do that. And I could be fearing that it would impact negatively my racing. Not saying it would, but I could fear that. Whereas if you do all these good things and you fly economy, you're maybe less comfortable in a plane, but you do all these things and it gives you an advantage in terms of performance, like then it's genius. Like everyone wants to do it. Like I feel like that, I don't know, I feel like it's just so genius.
Yeah, no, it really does motivate athletes. And like I saw firsthand of athletes when I first met them, like they didn't even understand why they can't just drink plastic bottles of water every day. Like they didn't understand why that was a bad thing. And so, but getting them bought in where I was like, well, if you don't want to crane the boat in at 6 a.m. next week, you're going to help me with this shoreline cleanup, and just getting them interested in a topic that they otherwise didn't care about. And it totally did work, and it drove long-term habit change. And I've definitely thought of ways before in cycling where I was like, whether it's like the golden ticket for like a front row start in a race, or like a team gets a wild card entry to a world tour race that they normally wouldn't get into. Like, something like that. And I mean, it's kind of cool, actually, like in North America, even though I think maybe because the UCI, like there's just less UCI races, and things like host housing are such a big part of the racing scene in North America on the road, and school visits. And like some of the races, if you do a school visit, you get a free entry fee. Those things add up for teams with small budgets. And so then you have races where, every single team is doing 2 or 3 school visits to the local elementary schools. And then you stay with those same families that have kids in the school as part of your host housing. And now they have these, like their heroes are standing right in front of them. And I know like our team has had some really long-term, really fun relationships that we've built up over programs like that. But I think at least I can speak for us and say we would do the school visits regardless, but I definitely can think of some teams that are only doing the school visits because there's financial incentive for them to do them. So it totally works, and I would love to see it play out over more sports or, just get tested in maybe smaller arenas. I don't know. Maybe gravel racing is a good place for them to test like the golden front row start ticket.
I agree. No, I think those are such great ideas. And how was it received, like, for the athletes and for the team? You know, how was the, I mean, you talked a little bit about some people, like, not even knowing that they couldn't drink out of plastic bottles. Was there some resistance at first, and did, like, it grew into something that they enjoyed doing, or was it a constant battle? Like, how was it for, I mean, even for you, like, for athletes and teams, how was it perceived? Yeah. Impact league.
Yeah. Definitely. Season one was a constant battle. And there's some, you sort of, I think you get to know the athletes too. And so, like, I knew that some people are more interested in, like, a tech and innovation project. So I'd take that to them. Some people are more into, like, knowing about where their food came from. And so anything food related, I'd work with other athletes. And then for me personally, like, trying to lead that within a sailing team where there wasn't as much buy-in, I felt like a mom sometimes, where I'd, like, have to nag somebody to do something. Like, you put your compost in the bin that says recycling on it, please take your apple core and put it in the like proper compost bin.
Yeah.
Which was, like, a totally different experience than on the cycling team, where riders that ended up on the team were already values aligned. Like, it was a reason that cyclists were reaching out to the team, because sustainability and sort of having a positive impact on their community is part of why they like biking as well. Mm-hmm. So that's easy. It was, like, already an engaged audience, and it was more about, like, how much could we do while still putting performance first? Whereas, yeah, the sailing team was a constant battle, but it paid off, because by season two, everybody was a lot more bought in and understood a lot more about the why. Like, why is this important?
Okay. Yeah, it's cool to see the change, though, that it ended up, you know, changing a little bit how they think, and it felt important for them after a while. So it's cool. And I think it's normal. Like, at first, probably they saw it, you know, as something that can impact their performance negatively. And I mean, athletes, they're competitive people. So it's like, why would I pay attention to this when I need to focus so much on the racing? But it's interesting to see how it kind of changed over the years. And I think like it's a testament to, like, just getting started, which sometimes is scary, but I think it can grow. And it can grow in importance for someone. So it's cool to hear that.
Yeah. One funny thing, because you brought up, like, competitive people.
Yeah.
One reason why the Impact League has evolved is because I think how competitive all of the athletes were. And so it was like your trash would be weighed at the end of every day. And so the weights, and you'd be ranked based on your waste. And so it started with athletes taking waste in their backpacks back to the hotels so that it could get in. And then it escalated by the, like, midway through our first season in the league, of people actually putting their trash in other teams' bins.
Oh my God.
Like, penalize them. And so then they would literally be, like, team managers going up to the Impact League being like, so-and-so put their wet cardboard in our bin and it's not ours, and they're cheating.
Oh,
and then
God.
On the other side, it's like, yeah, well, this team did it to us first. And so I think it speaks, though, to, like, how important the Impact League is to people to actually win it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was funny. So many of the rules have evolved to basically stay one step ahead of the super competitive athlete trying to win everything.
And so it's over the years, it's evolved, but you said it has changed. And I'm sure, like, that's normal. At first you try something and you kind of adjust over the years to make it more, appropriate, maybe is the word, but it's still going on now. Even after all these years, it's still, like, the Impact League is still part of the CLGP schedule. Okay.
Very, very much still part of it. And I think, another reason why I do think it's evolved, and I feel like I don't know where you were at with your personal sustainability journey, but I definitely have hit this personally as well, where you make so many changes and then you sort of hit a plateau where now the changes that you are left to make are either really big ones. So, like, making a statement like, I'm not going to take a plane, where you're like, well, that's not realistic. And I think, like, SailGP sort of hit that, where they went, well, we can't not travel to races. Like, we need to move our containers around. This has a set footprint. And so to make these next jumps and gains is actually going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. And so the whole Impact League concept has evolved as well to sort of fit into that and to almost say some of these changes are going to be really hard now. So what can we do in the interim so that we either get closer to making the next big change or to keep sort of inspiring and driving purpose? Wow. By like using the power of the athlete voice, for example.
Okay, cool. And I mean, I won't take too much more of your time, but I want to get back to the purpose partner. Is that something that you decided to apply to your cycling team or that you've thought to apply to your cycling team as well?
Yeah, I think we never done it officially. And it would be something that I would love to do, except for, and maybe this is a bit of like why the name of the team has changed to Platform Pro Cycling as well. I think what's hard when a team has one purpose partner is it needs to be the right purpose partner for everybody on the team. Mm-hmm. And even though you race as a team, you have a lot of individuals that have different passions and different areas of interest. And maybe, so maybe for one person, like for me, working with OceanWise or Ocean Ambassadors who are more focused on ocean health is the perfect fit because I love the ocean. And then maybe for somebody else who also loves skiing, Protect Our Winters would be a better purpose partner for them. And so I've struggled for sure around having like a set purpose partner for the bike team. And with that, I think that's also what inspired sort of a broadening of the purpose mission of saying it's Platform Pro Cycling. And what, like, as an athlete, what is sport your platform for? And so it can be like giving youth more access to the sport of cycling, inspiring more women, having an environmental positive impact. It can be a little bit more broad. And so, yeah, I think it, you, as an individual, it's something I'd still like to explore a little bit more. But again, I'd pick probably 4 or 5 different groups that I would want to work with that sort of align to all of my causes. And it's a tricky one. But I think it's the right fit for something like SailGP. And I think we've seen a little bit of it in the cycling world. When World Tour teams partner with charitable organizations, whether it's donating bikes to them or sort of leading skills clinics and things like that as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think your answer is cool too, though. It seems like you just, maybe instead of picking one, you just involve that in all of the small decisions you make. And like when you go to a race, having a positive impact in this community that is welcoming their racing by visiting school or, you know, like it seems like all the decisions that you make for the team have an impact and have a purpose. So maybe it's not just one person, but it's like, it seems like it's an idea that kind of is an umbrella on the team, you know, like just, okay, like kind of guiding the decisions, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I guess just to finish, like, I mean, you touched a little bit on it already by comparing cycling to SailGP, but after experiencing both, in the driver's seat, you know, like you've been an athlete in the SailGP and major part of like how the team was run, it seems. And now you're an athlete in cycling and you're running a team. So how do you think we can learn from what SailGP is doing? And would you think that it's something that's that would be feasible to bring something like an Impact League in the, like to the UCI or to like the whole structure of cycling?
Yeah. Oh, I think what is interesting and unique is thinking like SailGP is its own league. They run their own rules and everything. And so it's
like a private thing.
Yeah. So it works because there isn't really a governing body like the UCI that they need to speak to. Mm. And so I feel like where there's space for that in the cycling world is a little bit more of like race organizers taking that on and making it part of their ethos. And I think like the Gravel Earth Series is a great example. Like I did one of their races last year and I loved their setup around like even like the food, when you finished, they told you where, like, it was locally sourced. They had reusable plates there for you as an athlete when you finished. And you could tell it was really thought through around how can they minimize their footprint the most. It's a funny one because people ask me, like, why are there caravan cars, for example, in when they watch the Tour de France? And it's like, you can think of like, oh, well, they could be electric, but then you think on like the back end logistics of how long a stage is and you have to drive to and from the stage. And then what's the range of the electric car? And then there's the safety side, which I think that's another one, like learning from SailGP of they'll never make a safety shortcut. With their sustainability side. So like having safety motorboats out on the water burning fuel, that will never disappear because safety comes first. So there is like understanding that. And I mean, I would love for the UCI to test it at one or two races and say like, we're going to have, like, if you're interested as a team in engaging with this, there's one invite to, I don't know, pick a race, one race, and we're going to give it out to whoever, whatever team wins in this purpose challenge or an impact challenge. And there's a wild card entry just to see like how many teams even sign up. Is there interest? Does somebody engage with it? But you need to start somewhere. And so that's sort of, I think, I know the UCI has done a lot and I know they're doing a lot. And so I do hope also that at when they reach out to teams and athletes that you're engaging with them and giving them feedback rather than just being critical. So keeping an open mind to keep driving change together, because it's going to take collaboration for there to be change.
Yep. No, it's true. I did an episode with someone at the UCI actually. And I think that's one thing that came about is like, we're so quick to criticize the UCI, you know, like there's this big entity, which they are, but it's also like it's human working there, you know, they're real people and they're trying their best, and sometimes like they're actually a small team, and so like things are not moving very quickly always or as quickly as we want, but they're also juggling all of these other important factors and they're small, and so it takes a long time. But one thing that came, you know, that was clear is that they are open to feedback and discussions, but I think like we need to approach it as a discussion and not just as pointing finger to them and like always be criticizing. So it's, I think you said collaboration, and I think like it's true, and we need to keep that in mind and try to work with them to drive change and not just point at them and hope that they do all the work for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also the other side of that is like celebrate the success that does work. So like when something positive, like there is a change that's positive, celebrate it. If there is a race series that's doing things really well, like be positive and promote it as well as an athlete and give thank you to them. And that I think goes to the same to suppliers that are driving change and making a positive impact of, give them the kudos and share the message, because it'll also inspire other people around them to say, well, so-and-so is able to do it. Let's give it a try. Like, it can't be that hard.
Yeah. It goes back to the ethos of your team, the platform. Use your platform to drive change. And it's not always by pointing fingers. Sometimes it is, but it's sometimes about celebrating. I love that you said that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Isabella. I don't know, is there anything else you would like to share or anything else that, you know, you have advice that you say, like, I don't know, for me or for other athletes that are trying to do better? Like, is there anything else that you like to say?
Oh, man. I think, really, like, every little thing you do does make a difference. And, like, for me, one thing I share with teammates is you also never know who's watching you. So if you're at a race and you walk by and you see, like, a gel wrapper on the ground and you pick it up and then actually take it to the trash, there might be like a 9-year-old girl that's watched you do that now sees like, oh, it's cool to pick up trash when you see it walk by and put it in the trash bin. So like those little things have positive impacts that have these pretty big ripple effects, which are cool if you start to think about them. So think about the little actions that you do. And
I love it. Cool. Thank you so much.